Our first item on the agenda is, by the way, before I even say that, let me just say that we have two academic affairs resolutions that we want to get through tonight. And then after that, we will have the report from the chief academic officer and one from the chief in development and success officer. So, oh, okay, that's Barrington. All right, so that having been said, Fernica, would you call the roll, please?
Dr. Tard?
Here.
Dr. Barazone? Trustee Barber?
Here.
Trustee Clyburn?
Here.
Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Musgrove?
Here.
Trustee Scott?
Here.
Trustee White Richardson? Trustee Bell? Dr. Rudd?
Present.
Trustee Grossinger? General Schwartz? Trustee Shelton? President Mason?
Here.
Chief Academic Officer Potter?
Present.
Chief Student Development and Success Officer Latham?
Here.
Chief of Staff Guillory?
Here.
COO Franklin?
Here.
General Counsel Russell?
Here.
Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you very much. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the May 19th meeting. Are there any corrections or additions to those minutes?
I wanted to ask whether or not we would be getting a report with regards for Dr. Potter, with regards to the mortuary science program.
That will be in my report, Trustee Scott. You don't have a written one, largely because I've been out sick, but I will cover a number of topics during the time of the report this evening.
Thank you. All right, that happened in, I'm sorry, who's speaking?
No, I just had to get unmuted. This is Tony White, Trustee Tony White Richardson.
Okay, welcome, okay. Tony. All right, then may I have a motion to approve the minutes of May 19th?
So moved.
So moved.
So moved.
All right.
Second by Scott.
Thank you. Then we need to have a quorum or a roll call.
Dr. Tard?
Yes.
Dr. Barazone? Trustee Barber?
Yes.
Trustee Clyburn?
Yes.
Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Musgrove?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee White Richardson?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion carries.
Good. Thank you very much. Our first item on the agenda is the approval of tenure for Dr. Ravi, and I hope I'm saying his last name correctly. Shinda, is that right?
It's correct, Mr. Todd.
Thank you. For Dr. Ravi Chinta, from the School of Business and Public Administration. I've written a few things here, and I'll just go ahead and read them to you and not talk off the top of my head. Dr. Ravi Chinta was recently hired as the Associate Dean of the School of Business and Public Administration. He has been judged to be an outstanding professor with exemplary skills and expertise. In their review, Dr. Chinta received high rankings by the faculty of the School and Public Administration. Somebody is needs to turn their mute off. In their review, Dr. Chinta received high rankings by the faculty of the School of Business and Public Administration, the department chair, and the dean. He was ranked excellent in his teaching effectiveness and was also cited for his prolific and reputable research and scholarly works. He has produced a substantial body of scholarly publications, which include 27 research articles, 2 book chapters, 101 publications, I'll repeat that number, 101 publications, and 75 conference presentations. Dr. Chenta has received high marks for innovative and excellent teaching, including bringing real-world experience into his classroom. He has provided exemplary service at the department, college, and university levels. Dr. Chenta is a distinguished and innovative teacher, scholar, and researcher, and I recommend that we forward his dossier along to the full board, and that he be awarded tenure. Is Dr. Sapiri on?
Yes, Dad, I'm here.
Okay. If there is anything that you'd like to say, this is your opportunity.
Thank you very much. Actually, you eloquently, mentioned everything, in support of Dr. Chinta. But we are delighted to have him on board. He's both industry professional-wise and academic-wise, very much qualified. And that's what really professional schools, desire, and accreditation bodies, they want that. He has already received two tenures from two different universities. This is amazing that, now he's with us and, he's going through his third tenure process. So he has proven himself, again and again. He also, among the things that, somehow came to my attention was that he's a Fulbright scholar also. He also runs on the personal side two charities in India, which are still, running, So he's an amazing person. And, I highly, highly recommend him.
Thank you. Very impressive. Anybody else want to add anything?
Dr. Chenta, no, I think you have covered all bases for the recommendation of tenure for Dr. Chenta.
Okay. Then may I have a motion that we recommend to the full board that Dr. Chenta be awarded tenure? Barrington?
Yes.
I need to make a motion.
I move that we accept the recommendation to for tenureship for the candidate.
All right, and to move our recommendation forward to the full board.
To move the recommendation to the full board.
Thank you very much. Is there a second?
I second it.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm supposed to call the roll. Excuse me.
Dr. Tarek?
Yes.
Dr. Barazone? Trustee Barber?
Yes.
Trustee Clyburn?
Yes.
Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Musgrove?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee White Richardson?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion carries.
Thank you very much. Our next action item is the approval of tenure for Dr. Dwayne Jones. And I've written a few things about him too. Dr. Jones was recently appointed Dean of the College of Agriculture, Urban Sustainability, and Environmental Sciences. He has degrees in urban design and industrial technology and environmental sciences. And he has also served as acting Dean of Causes. Dr. Jones has published peer-reviewed reports, articles, and books, as well as having authored and co-authored grants totaling over $1.8 million. His highly successful and internationally recognized East Capital Urban Farm Project and the UDC Food Hubs, he has been recognized for those things. And as a model by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Dr. Jones brings to his role as dean a combination of teaching and industry practice. He was given a multi-level review by departmental faculty, the acting department chairs, and the Causes College-wide Committee for Promotion and Tenure. He has proven himself to be an excellent teacher, scholar, and creative worker, and both the internal and external communities have been established a national green infrastructure program and as director of UDC Center for Sustainable Development. Based upon his record of teachings, scholarship, and service, I move that Dr. Dwayne Jones be awarded tenure. Dr. Potter, would you like to speak?
Dr. Tarr, thank you for the opportunity and for providing a summary. The only additional things that I would add as context for Dean Jones is that while he served as acting dean for 18 months, Dean Jones was a selected finalist of four in a national search that was shepherded by AGB Consulting. And in that search, he ended up being selected as a final candidate. The other piece that I think is very essential to Dr. Jones's deanship while he has been here is his engagement with the community. Dwayne has been very instrumental in really, as you have pointed out, helping to create master gardening programs, green infrastructure programs, our urban food hubs. You probably are familiar with the aquaponics and many of the other green top roof initiatives that mm-hmm. are happening across the district. He has had a hand in much of that. And he has been very instrumental in shepherding along our PhD program in urban leadership yes. and entrepreneurship. And so it is with those additions that I would say his recommendation comes forward to the board.
Thank you. Thank you. Does anybody else want to add anything? That being said, or that being not said, what we need to do is have a motion that we recommend this tenure to the full board at its next meeting.
This is Trustee Wyatt Richardson. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes, I hear you now.
Okay. I'd like to move that we recommend go forth with Dr. Jones, correct?
That's right.
For tenure. As presented to the back, to the full board.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That works.
Trustee Edwards seconds.
I'm sorry.
Oh, don't we need a second? I was Trustee Barber seconds.
Barber, yes. Second. Okay. Trustee Barber seconds.
The motion, yes.
Okay. We need a roll call vote.
Dr. Tard?
Yes.
Dr. Barazone? Trustee Barber?
Yes.
Trustee Clyburn?
Yes.
Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Musgrove?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee White Richardson?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you. That doesn't quite conclude our meeting, but it does conclude our action items. So what I'd like to do now is to turn that part of the meeting over to Dr. Potter and to Mr. Latham. So Dr. Potter, if you're up to it.
Sure, thank you, Trustee Tard, and to members of the committee, Lawrence Potter, Chief Academic Officer here at the University of the District of Columbia. I'd just like to really talk about what we've been able to achieve institutionally across the academic and research enterprises since the beginning of the fall semester. My commentary will be sent to you in a written report when I am fully released to be back here. I'm released to be partly back, but I'm operating against my doctor's orders. But I feel good, and it keeps me busy. So when I think about what the university has embarked upon, particularly in academics and in research, the needle keeps moving forward. In the area of research for the fiscal 21 year, we submitted a total of 58 million in faculty proposals. And at the close of fiscal 21, we were able to account for, through our HERD survey, 43 million in research. And that is slightly down by $3 million from fiscal 20, where we had $46 million, the largest recorded amount. But $43 million is still a knockout of the park for an institution our size.
That's good enough.
We continue to work really well in our area of land grant functions, where our Water Resources Institute received its annual certification. And so the WRI Institute, led by Talesa Dexisa, that institute has been certified again with no findings. We have also recently completed all updates and signature for renewals with the USDA. There are a number of active searches going on across academic and student affairs and workforce development. And very recently, I approved 30 active tenure track searches. And so the university is moving forward. Three of those searches were in the law school, 5 in the College of Arts and Sciences, 4 in the School of Engineering and Applied Sciences, 5 in Causes, 4 at the community college, 2 in the library, and 1 in the School of Business and Public Administration. We will be pulling together all of our nursing faculty from both programs to discuss the hiring of a director of nursing education. You have heard President Mason talk about pathways and pipelines. And so the intended focus moving forward is really looking at what is in the best interest of the university. And so we will hire one director of nursing to oversee the nursing programs, both at the community college as well as our baccalaureate programs, while also infusing our certifications in workforce development. So that pathway is moving along quite well. A couple of other things that I think are of important note. Very recently, we had a virtual site visit by the Mortuary Science external visitors. They were with us for a period of 3 days. I am happy to report preliminarily that in the exit meeting, there were no findings found for our mortuary science program.
That's great.
We are awaiting the report. The report will be the official, but we felt very proud. It was a pretty extensive review. They were very pleased with the caliber of our faculty. They were very pleased with our library and learning resources. They were very pleased with the state-of-the-art mortuary science facility. Because they were not here, we were able to hire a professional videographer to do a 360-degree video that is just very well done. And so through the business aspects of that review, the curricular aspects, all of the assessments and the evidences that were required, we knocked it out the park. And so to Dean Hamilton and to the mortuary science faculty being led right now by our interim Professor Kirksey, they were able to come together under really tight circumstances. We hired a new mortuary science director who started in August, and 2 weeks before the actual site visit, he tendered a resignation. The site visit team did provide us the opportunity to ask if we wanted to delay the visit. The faculty felt very strongly that they had been here, that they fully understood the program, that they had worked on the self-study even prior to the hiring of the new director, and we moved forward seamlessly. We currently have relaunched the mortuary science director's position. We are working very closely with all of the outlets as we have in the past. In the recruitment of that, human resources is engaged in that process. We look forward to really leaning in on our mortuary science advisory board, where we have a number of professionals who send in recommendations. I don't know what the pool looks like as of yet, but our target is to really have a new director hired by the start of the new year. All that being said, we have a highly competent interim director and Professor Kirksey, who has served in that role, and we think that we will be able to continue to deliver. The other thing that I will say about our mortuary science program is based on the applications, we have 15 applicants above where we are last year. So we are moving in the right trajectory in terms of enrollment, in terms of our accreditation, but more importantly, in terms of synergies around the faculty bolstering the program and students being interested in that program. The other thing that I would say with respect to accreditations, I think I may have mentioned this, but our engineering programs were all ABET accredited. And very recently in the engineering analyses, it is found that the University of the District of Columbia is the only university with an ABET accredited biomedical engineering program, the only HBCU with a biomedical ABET engineering accredited program. And so we feel very proud about that. The numbers in that program have grown tremendously. Therefore, we are hiring a new faculty in that area. As you recall, last spring, the board approved the baccalaureate degree in cybersecurity. We will launch a search for that faculty person, and that program will be coming on board in the fall. And so we're moving in the right direction. Our Center for the Advancement of Learning continues to do great work in terms of providing faculty professional development in the area of engaged technology. We have launched very recently our Center for Digital Access and Learning. And so at the height of the pandemic, you all will recall that the president wanted us to really think about how do we provide ongoing services for our students and faculty who did not have connectivity and or devices. And we were able to, with a combination of institutional dollars and CARES dollars, to create what was originally called low-risk learning zones, learning pods, on the sixth floor of Building 4250. We have grown the footprint of that initial vision by President Mason to create what is now called the Center for Digital Access and Learning. And the Center for Digital Access and Learning will have its official grand opening in February of 2022, in which the trustees will receive an invitation. But I think one of the key points that I'd underscore about the Center for Digital Access and Learning is that it's really a hub of pulling our faculty and our students into similar spaces whereby we are providing ongoing training in pedagogy and technology immersed instruction, while at the same time providing classroom space for faculty to teach and offer high flex. You probably have heard of this thing called high flex. Well, the University of the District of Columbia is in the middle of it and we are delivering it. We started this fall with 5 courses. We are offering 9 courses in the spring using high flex. Also in that space, we're doing what's called extended reality and virtual reality. You probably see people walking around with these big goggles on. They're called Oculus. And so many of our classes are now going to be integrating 3D dimensional lessons and experiential learning in these spaces. And so it's really about creating for the university access to students who still have connectivity issues and device issues, while at the same time equipping our faculty with the understanding of how they can continue to advance in 21st century pedagogies and learning. And it's an exciting opportunity for us. 2 weeks ago, there was a press release in the Washington Business Journal on the center, and we will continue to share that information with you all. Also on the academic side, I've talked a bit about our high flex. Other things that you would find really important are faculty continue to receive grants. We are really engaging faculty through a professional development series, not only just the faculty, but our graduate students. Given the fact that we now have 36 students in our PhD programs and our master's programs are growing, we thought that it would be best to really kind of center around how do you provide synergistic opportunities for graduate students and faculty to really understand Grants 101, to understand research writing and publication. And so Dr. Victor McQuarrie and Dr. Malva Reed have partnered to begin to offer a Lunch and Learn series. And these are the kinds of professional development opportunities that faculty across all colleges and schools, as well as our graduate students, are engaging in. We were visited by the Naval Surface Warfare Center on October the 22nd, and they're very interested in a couple of things: UDC research, student and faculty internships, and our continuing education. They will come to us on December 16th to visit a number of our centers here on campus, and so we feel very good about that. The last two things that I would provide an update around really happen to be in the area of where we're looking to make great strides. And what I mean by great strides are graduate education and a review of our undergraduate offerings. In the domain of graduate education, as you recall, earlier this year, I appointed Dr. Malva Reed as the Assistant Chief Academic Officer for Graduate and Online Education and Academic Partnerships. And in that role, Dr. Reed has really worked closely with our Graduate Council to take a comprehensive look at recruitment, admissions, and policies that are centered around graduate education, not pulling graduate programs into the graduate school format, but keeping them decentralized in a way where they are connected to the colleges and schools, while at the same time making sure that we are offering comprehensive services and uniform strategy around the admissions process, the cycling process, because we see this as a growth opportunity. It is a growth opportunity for the institution, because as enrollments decline, one of the things that we fully know is that if we are not responsive to the markets, we can't compete in the markets. Mm-hmm. And so we have worked through our institutional capacity and research task force to leverage technology, working with the Division of Student Development and Success and Admissions to make sure that the central application services process across all graduate programs will be leveraged and in many ways refined to include and capture the best possible applicants coming into the university. So we are growing that area, not just from an enrollment perspective, but also looking at the kinds of support services and policies we have in place to support those students. The last thing that I will report on today really has to do with our rethinking or reimagining the undergraduate, what's called the general education program. Every institution has what's called a core curriculum or a general education program. And in our reviewing of our general education program, we will begin to look at math education across the university, because we're offering math at the community college and we're offering math on the Van Ness campus. But Dean Hamilton and her team did a preliminary study on the kinds of textbooks we were using, the learning outcomes, and we found that there was an imbalance in terms of what students at the community college were getting out of courses and what students were getting on the Van Ness campus. And so math is part of our general education curriculum, and I've mandated that we really began to have the big conversation about what is math education at the University of the District of Columbia. Also attached to that will be this whole notion of general education. We currently require students to complete 39 hours in the general education program. And so we will begin on December 15th with an internal conversation about what's in the general education that is operating really well? And do we need to reduce that credit number hour to include two core components? One, a first year seminar that is required of all students, because we currently do not have a required first year seminar for all students. And then two, infusing within that first year seminar or either some other course, a focus on employability outcomes. So students come to the university, they take 101 this or 101 that, and in some domains they may be receiving how their major connects to jobs or how their major connects to certain outcomes and employment. We want to look very broadly and make sure that students fully understand the range of options and opportunities that they have. And we find that doing and building that into the general education will be an important aspect. So that's the beginning of that conversation. We will work with Dr. Arlene King-Berry to identify faculty to serve on this task force, in such that as the review process of the general education review begins, it will be faculty driven, and it will include representation broadly, because general education touches all students at the undergraduate level. And lastly, we're looking at faculty workload and how the faculty workload from a contractual standpoint in terms of research faculty, teaching faculty, clinical faculty, having clarity around that as we began conversations in many areas across the institution. And so we'll begin to talk about the faculty workload, because that has become a concern for some faculty who are outperforming in grants. And, you know, they're spending more time on grants and not enough time on teaching. And, you know, how do we create some balance for them? Looking at the best practices and how we reward and incentivize those individuals. So that completes my report. And again, these things will be concretized and codified in my normal format and sent to you.
I'm sorry. I lost the last two words.
And that was me, Chairman. I was going to ask Lawrence. He sent out a notice about a special program he was selected to participate in.
Yes.
I'm not sure everybody saw it, so I'm just asking him to repeat it here, if you don't mind.
Thank you. I was going to get to that.
So the American Association of State Colleges and Universities will be doing a three-panel series on race and democracy in higher education. And I was selected as one of a handful of HBCU chief academic officers to serve on each of those three panels. And the first one will be this Friday at 2:00. And there will be one in January and one in February.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes. You did an excellent job in your report. If we could get a copy of that, because there's so much there that it becomes a little too difficult for all of us to absorb it, and it would be very useful as we present to the full board. We'd like to share this with them too.
I think, Trustee Tarr, that's what you may have missed. I said I will get this all codified in a document and get it to you in my normal form.
Oh, okay. Now, I apologize. It cut off it toward the end.
Dr. Potter, this is Carolyn Rudd. I wanted to know, how can we access that panel on Friday? Is that possible?
Absolutely. I will have Fernica to send the link to the entire board, and I think there may be a press release coming out in advance of it. So, but I'll make sure that Fernica has the contact information and she gets it to the board.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Tarr, may I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay, fantastic report. I'm really excited about the mortuary science program. In fact, I have spoken to some graduates who actually serve on the mortuary board in the D.C. area, and I'm trying to get them to do a scholarship through my high school to UDC for a student coming out of my high school to UDC with regards to the mortuary science program. So you'll be hearing from me with regards to that. But also, with the wonderful news that you gave us with regards to the engineering program being one of the only HBCUs or the only HBCU with that initiative that we have, I think that's something really worthy of making sure that the media hears about that. Those are the kinds of things that we definitely want some kind of way that it gets out to the mass media with regards to what we're doing and the kinds of excellence that are being done by students at UDC. So that doesn't necessarily go to you, Dr. Potter, it goes to our president.
Thank you, Trustee Scott.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions?
Trustee Musgrove, just a question for Dr. Potter. As we look at our general education program, I know you're going to bring together staff, members of the faculty to discuss it. Will students be included as a part in that discussion at all?
Absolutely, Trustee Musgrove. So, you know, I want to kind of make sure we're not discontinuing our existing general education. We're taking a fresh look at it, right? Because Middle States suggested that we need to have one uniform general education. And so the overall process will be to include students. In fact, out of student development and success, our career services people kept saying, we don't see what students are learning about careers in their majors. I think we're at a place now where, because the university has a general education and every student must go through the general education program, we've got to build employability outcomes into that. And so the only way that we can do that, of course, is to include student voices along the way. Mm-hmm. And there will be representation for students in some of these task forces that will start in the spring semester. So absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Great.
There is one last question. I'm so sorry, Dr. Todd. I did want to ask Dr. Potter as well. And that was, did we get any update with regards to the COSTS program and a research program that was brought to the department with regards to the Black Farmers project?
So I am familiar with the request. I think originally there was a request from not UNICEF, I forget the HBCU organization, but there was a request made to Dean Jones about bringing the Black Farmers Research something here. And because of the notice, it was very short. And because of the staffing and capacity, we could not respond to that immediate request. I know that in recent conversations, President Mason and Vice President Victor Jones are putting forward a request Vice President Victor McQuarrie has made clear to me that we will be making special requests for three things. One, funding for the Center for Urban Research Engagement and Scholarship, which is in causes. Also funding to support Black Farmers Research, which will be a part of causes. And there's one other piece. Dwayne, are you able to speak to any of these? Dean Jones, are you still on the call?
Yes, I am. I got kicked off about 2 minutes ago, so I missed part of the discussion. I heard you speaking.
You talked a bit about the Black Farmers Initiative that we could not accept immediately because of the short notice, but what Dr. McQuarrie has proposed in terms of causes moving forward as a research project.
Yes, so we could not accept it in the immediate past or future. However, we have proposed an idea that we think can help us move forward with our federal and land grant funding. And for the Black Farmers Cooperative, we actually met with them and gave them a tour. We have a signed agreement with them, and so we gave them a tour of the farm, of the East Capitol and Urban Farm and some of the sites. We met with their board, I should be more specific, and they're very interested and eager in getting involved with the UDC and causes, and we have a lot of ideas for moving forward.
So, Trustee Scott, I hope that answers your question. That's where we are. We now have an MOU and are in conversation with the Black Farms.
And I'll just remind everybody that Trustee Scott is the one that introduced us to them. And when I talk to the causes folks, they're very excited about the potential of the relationship. So thank you for that, Trustee Scott.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
This is Trustee White Richardson. I don't have a question in reference to the academic side that has been presented. But I have a question, just a small question about administration in reference to, I know, and UDC currently does not do transcripts electronically. Where are we in the process of trying to be able to deliver transcripts electronically when students request them for jobs or et cetera?
So I can tell you that we are in the last phase of the integration of the National Clearinghouse, and e-transcripts will be available effective February of 2022. That is a project that we have been working on for the last year. And now that we have IT professionals in place, we're able to kick that ball further down the road by doing the integration and the beta testing that is necessary. So by February of 2022, electronic transcripts will be a part of the university's offer.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Shall we move along to Dr. Latham's report? Dr. Latham?
Good evening, Trustee, and good evening to all. William Latham, Chief Student Development Success Officer for the university. And Renika sent out my written report. I'm just going to cover a couple of highlights of that. The main focus for us in student development, of course, coming back to campus, is the understanding of what the supportive services have been in the past and how they need to be increased because of what COVID has taught us, right? And because of the impact of COVID on our student population, as you guys already know. We recognize the fact that, as you see from the report, counseling services has gone up 54%. We recognize the fact that we obviously mandated vaccines across campus to be safe, and the process of that being 2,000 students having to upload their documentation that allowed health services to review that particular process has really been something that's really taught us a lot about what our students' needs are. So we continue to lean in on that process to make sure that we understand how and what those needs are going forward, and then how to make sure they're supportive in these particular transition moments of coming back to campus and then coming back even into the spring semester more in person, even from the hybrid and high flex, as Dr. Potter mentioned, context in terms of modalities. So from the reports you see there, our particular focus has really been about making sure our telehealth services are still available virtually for our students, and they are, and making sure that we are maintaining the type of software, as you see from the report there, that allows our faculty and staff to understand how to make referrals to the counseling center. As you see from that particular, on page 3, what we talked about there in terms of how we purchased that particular software, the Cognito software for at-risk mental health, is a module that you can go into, a portal that allows faculty, staff, and students to understand how to make referrals and also how to speak about that with the student. And that's an interactive, particularly powerful portal that allows that particular process to be better understood. Because often, as you know, that's the disconnect, is that the student, staff, faculty may know of a student that may need that service but don't know how to have that conversation. So we roll it out this semester. We're going to continue to roll it out, of course, this semester and next, to all stakeholders across the university. So we're very excited about what that means for addressing this 54% increase. And so that's kind of how we've seen our work overall, is being able to identify certain key areas of need, figure out what that particular process of what that barrier may be, and then leaning on that to say, this is how we can mitigate that, this is how we can better support that overall. It's just one example. The other part, what we've been able to do, is really still build a student community here at the university even during this particular transition back to campus. And that means community being reestablished through our online portal, which is called Presence. So if you talk about what we talk about during our student outcomes conversation, the EAB, and what that means for student success as a platform, think about Presence that same way. The Presence platform called the Firebird Nest is what allows us and has and will continue to allow us to be able to monitor students at events, customize surveys of students, reach out to students with text messages through an app that allows them to talk to us literally, virtually, around their needs from a student development perspective, and also to capture how we programmatically impact them through that survey process. And that's, again, through Presence, that software pool that we have launched this semester, and have student organizations have joined that particular portal. 40 so far, we have, you know, obviously more joined throughout this semester and next. But that's the way we've tried to really make sure the technology infrastructure is in place to support us during the pandemic and even beyond the pandemic. And Presence is one of the ways we're going to do that overall. Again, the mental health piece has been important. And so we continue to make sure that we monitor our website from the Counseling Center, that we have the link for the online process there for them to sign up for the virtual telehealth. And to make sure that we're looking at other options too. If it's a 24-hour apparatus that we need to consider as a call center to make sure we can to make that growing need of the counseling center going forward, we're looking at that opportunity there, as well as some other outreach programs we're gonna launch in the spring semester that's specifically focused on cohort populations within the university that we know, because of the counseling data that we have a greater need and greater resource need for those services. And so that outreach is going to start in January, and very excited to see what that impact will be on the student population that we serve. And so you'll see a deeper dive around Cognito going out in terms of a marketing campaign for that, and software portal around how to address and how to get students referred, but also around the actual outreach of specific types of workshops like coping skills. So we're launching a coping skills workshop the 6 weeks in January to help students understand that process of coping with certain type of stresses, academic, family, that we've seen increase a lot over the course of this past year and a half, obviously due to the pandemic. And so those types of things we're trying to be very strategic about, but also being very customized to our students and listening to them so we can really get feedback from them, either through my task force meetings I have monthly with the students, and also through the center staff, of course, being able to tell us, okay, these are some trends that we see that we need to address both short-term and long-term to make sure that we meet the needs of our students from a mental health perspective there. The other need that we're really seeing services and starting to build back for is the food pantry. As you see on page 5 of the actual report, we were fortunate enough to get a $6,800 grant from ECMC around that particular support of our food pantry. It's open on Thursdays now, and it's also open by appointment, so students can access it via an appointment process as well, a scheduling process, which has worked well for us. And again, open on Thursday. So that's going to increase, of course, going forward. But again, that usage is going to be supported through that grant that we got from ECMC, which we're excited about. And of course, SDS is going to continue to support the food pantry. But as again, as we know, students have that food insecurity need from our own data. We'll continue to support the pantry going forward, and we'll increase that work as we have a new location, of course, in 4250 from that vantage point there. Last couple of pieces I will address on the report itself are really around student outreach and student activities. We've launched a kind of a Spirit Wednesdays program that allows us to have our Greek organizations, along with my office, co-sponsor from 12 to 2 Spirit Wednesdays activities. In terms of, I sponsor 2 food trucks that come out and serve the community and provide food, but the Greek organizations per week have sponsored this particular activity as well. So they table, they provide community opportunities for students to get engaged with them in service learning and have a chance to really have a presence on campus from a leadership perspective that allows the students to see Greek life in a different vein, a different context, and still have community built around that through the opportunity to have food and community through the food trucks that we provide for that particular 2-hour window on Wednesday. So really excited to see that continue to grow. It started off well this semester, had some good feedback from the Greeks around that, and they've been very proud to participate with us in that regard, because I think they were looking for also another way to be involved with campus outside of just their traditional probates and traditional opportunities around their Founders Weeks.
how can we get more involved to make sure we have an activity and impact? And we had a boot camp leadership training for the Divine Nine, and that will continue. And we'll look to continue their leadership capacity on campus because they are the influencers. They are the ones who drive a lot of the cultures, you know, on this campus. As we come back, we want to make sure the Greeks are heavily involved from a leadership perspective in serving the campus and serving the community as a whole. So stay tuned for that particular work with the Divine Nine as we increase Greek registration and Greek participation through that process there. The Student Center has also been a viable and strong leadership development process, as you know, the Student Center itself, because we have 30 to 40 students who work there. Intentionality and they do work. And you can see from page 7 of the report, now particular work has included Firebird movie nights and a lot of different other programming that we've done this semester to allow students to be able to still see the Student Center as their center, as their home, as what they have as ownership for this campus and as a hallmark building for them that they can participate in, come to have social events in, and be able to launch and be able to build programs that they own, that they deliver, and that they see as a part of the overall student experience. So that will continue. And we also will continue to build out the student employment process there, as you see also in the report, from a standpoint of training and leadership development. So we have student workers who are maintaining and working with staff on the weekends to help their development process as leaders, but also being trained on staff and event planning, so they can have that skill set be added to their portfolio going forward as well. So I just want to give an overview again of the report. Happy to answer any questions, Trustee Tarr, that anybody else may have regarding the report, and turn it over to you at this time.
Yes, I have a question, Dr. Latham. This is Trustee Scott. Do you have students that would have a need during the Christmas holidays with regards to your food bank? And I'm only asking that question because my son and his family have serviced over 100 families during the Thanksgiving Day holidays and will be doing likewise during the Christmas holidays. So if there's a need for a student or two that may need food during, or at least dinner and what have you, during the Christmas holidays, I just would need a contact person to forward him to that person so we can make sure the students are taken care of.
Absolutely, we can do that. I'll text you that information. The contact person on our side will be Donnie Russell, but I'll send you her information.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
We're on the record now. This is probably the shortest meeting that we have had. We have finished our business, and we've essentially gone through the reports of the academic dean and the student affairs dean. So if there is no other business, then may we have a motion to adjourn.
So moved, Clyburn.
Second, Scott.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Rivers?
Dr. Tarr? Sure. Dr. Tarr?
Yes.
Dr. Barazzone? Trustee Barber?
Yes.
Trustee Clyburn?
Yes.
Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Musgrove?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee White Richardson?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion carries.
Good. With that being said, we are now adjourned.